You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
From the Fifth Quarter Studio in Madison, Wisconsin, you're listening to the Coaching Youth Hoops Podcast.
They're playing basketball.
Here's our hosts, Steve Collins, and Bill Flitter.
And huffing and puffing. We put the ball in a bucket of water before we kick it. So he's got to catch a wet ball when he's under stress. We then got some of our own players with pads because we don't like pads. We think it's a bit soft. And it just caused a bit of controversy. But we have two or three of our big players with padding running at him with trying to catch a wet ball while he's fatigued, because that's what the problem was. And I think coaches have been overly obsessed with trying to get this myth, this imaginary technical perfection in very closed environments. That's got nothing to do really with the game. Again, different for you guys. Again, I know sometimes the whole game revolves around getting a free throw right, and there's rules around what players can do. I get all that. But most of the time we execute skills at speed, under fatigue, under pressure. That's the environment where we've got to build our most effective coaching. It's not about the skill. It's the execution of the skill. And I mean, we have it's a very common thing around the world, is that kids go to their first big competition. So it could be an interstate meet, could be a national championships, could be state age champ, whatever it is. And they're going there. And I say to coaches, what happened the first time you took your group to a serious competition? They said, we lost. And I said, you know why? Because we're really good at coaching kids and coaching skills. We're not so good at coaching them to win in the environment of the competition. That's the gap, that we're really good at doing study and saying, I know exactly what a basketball shot looks like and I can coach it. Oh, there's so many videos about it. That's not the trick. The trick is, can they do it away from home, sharing a room with someone they don't know and they don't get any sleep, maybe having to have McDonald's for breakfast because nothing else is open at the beginning of the competition, where mum and dad are not going to be there, where they're under real pressure, where they've been hit a few times by a bigger opposition player, they're fatigued, they're stressed, and they've still got to execute the skill. We're really good at teaching skill, but the art is to teach them to do it when and where it matters. And that, again, that's what coaching is all about.
So take it. So for example, in basketball, then what we would do using your scenario is what we call small-sided games, right? So 3-on-3. So we'll teach a skill. Like, for great example, was last night. We did a move how to get open. Okay. So it's kind of a spin move, right? So I showed it once. Showed it twice how to do the technique of it. And then I match them up. We had one person on defense, one person on offense, and one passer. So obviously the offense had to try to get open and do it, and then they go live one-on-one. So, you know, I in my head, exactly what you said when I wrote the practice plan was, oh man, I'm you know, it's Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan going one-on-one. Kobe's doing, you know, doing the execution of that perfectly, right? And, you know, one of the things I always keep though in the back of my head is practice is messy, and it should be messy, especially when they're learning something new and they're trying to figure it out. And, you know, as I'm getting older as a coach and learning, you know, I stopped, like I would have probably stopped that drill 100 times. No, that's not it. Right. Turn this, you know, your feet, you know, right. Just constant. But I just let them play, and we did it. You know, we probably did that for about 5 minutes and then moved on to the next thing. So I always try to structure practices in these kind of 5 minute increments of, you know, I actually have a clock. I'm watching the clock, or I have a, you know, just my expensive computer that I carry everywhere, right? My phone. And, you know, I'm tracking time, because one thing that I found is, you know, keep practice moving. Keep practice moving, quick, 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 you know. And what do you think they always ask? First, you know, you're 10 minutes, you're doing your drills, you're running up and down the court. Coach, are we going to scrimmage? It's like, you know, and I got to the point where I'm like, stop asking me if we're going to scrimmage. You know, the whole practice is a scrimmage. But, you know, their idea of a scrimmage is what? 5-on-5, full court, you know, and absolutely nothing that we just worked on, right? I stopped practice last night and I said, so guys, can you do me a huge favor? It would just warm my heart. You know that move that we worked on at the beginning of practice? Can I just see someone just execute that, you know, a little bit? Because you're killing yourself just running and, you know, up and down these lines. So anyway, that was my practice last night. And, you know, it's not perfect, right? But How would you think about practice like that and tweak that and make that better?
Yeah, this is a reason why so much of us drink heavily. And is like the wonderful friend of mine, Les, who's used to be the coaching director for football here for soccer.
Mm-hmm.
He says a wonderful line, which is the game is their teacher. And
I love that.
And it's a beautiful way of looking at it. If Les was here, mm-hmm. and he's not, but if Les was here, Les would say, if it was me, I'd mm-hmm. have 5 or 6 scrimmages throughout practice. And I'd say, okay, guys, here's the drill. Mm-hmm. Is the, how do I get open? And you'd do it until they got a general feel for it, for an idea. Again, not perfect, because mm-hmm. chasing mm-hmm. perfection will drive you crazy.
Yeah,
but I do it a few times until they go, okay, coach, I get it. He moves there. I pass there. He spins out. Okay, get it, coach. Good. So, okay, guys, we're going to play for 3 minutes. Let's go. And I want to see that in. I want to see that in there. Good, good, good. And so they play full court, 5-on-5 for a little while. Then you go, guys, stop, stop, stop. Guys, got an idea for you. What about if you guys over there, I want you to execute the spin and open move, and what happens there with the D, you know? So you give them a scenario, they play with, okay, guys, let's go back to scrimmage. So the game flows through practice, and they're continually going back. Because look, that's again, a classic coaching model is most coaching practices around the world go something like, certainly football, you know, without touching basketball too much, that they would go warm up and stretch, some sort of general loosening, easy going, some close skill practices to get them thinking about the game, small-sided games, and right at the end, okay, guys, let's have a quick 5-on-5 before we go. Let's have a quick game before we go.
Yeah.
The whole reason, why did they come to you? The whole reason they're there is to play the game. Remember that they're a bunch of kids. We like to think they're athletes. You know, Scottie Pippen was an athlete. These guys are kids throwing a ball. The whole reason they came to see you was, one, they like you. Two, they love the game and they want to play with their friends.
Yes, that's it. So if we say, you're right.
That's what you want, but I want you to practice this drill until you get it perfectly.
Right.
So then at the end of the night, they're going, I hate this. I don't want to do these. He's not giving me those core things that I want. I like the coach. I love the game. But, man, I'm not playing with my friends. Where it's mm-hmm. it's not – you're not athletizing the game. You're the sport. You're playing the game. And they're there to play. The whole. How many times have you met a college player or a pro player and you say, tell me about basketball. What does it mean to you? I just love the game. I love having a ball in my hand. I love playing with my friends. I love the feeling of sinking. But I love those – they talk about love and they talk about what it means to them as a human being.
Yeah.
And they're coming and saying, I want to play the game, and we let them play as an afterthought. Well, we probably
good point.
Are heading yeah. in a direction that's not going to be consistent with them wanting to keep coming back. And that, I mean, I can't take credit for that's Les's idea. He just says they're there to play. They want to play, and you're teaching them the skill not to perfect the skill, but to enhance their experience of playing the game. They get more skills. Their experience of playing is enhanced. So the link between the two is incredibly important. And I mean, again, common practice, Bill, around the world, not just United States, Australia, not just basketball and swimming. It's a common mistake is that we go, we've been so ingrained with this, has to warm up, has to do core stability work. Oh, got to do our Pilates type work, got to do our closed right. skills so we get these mental patterns, these neural pathways. Then we're going to do small-sided at higher speeds than to give more exposures to handling the ball. And then right at the end, the whole purpose of the whole thing, we right. give them 5 minutes before they go home
yeah,
and wonder why true. They're not satisfied with practice.
Yeah. Well, is it the fact that, because I'll hear this, right, is, okay, you and I are about the same age, okay? So, you know, that's how we grew up, and we probably grew up with the coach barking at us, and I know mine, you know, he would call me an oxygen thief, right? And you just go on and play, and you imagine calling a kid an oxygen thief today.
I think I know his brother.
So here we are, you know, we're, you know, hard coaching, we're learning drills, we do it this way. And now you're saying, well, let's change it to this, for lack of better terms, like this new quote unquote new format. Kids love to play, let them play. Is this just new research that's coming out? That's how we should have been doing it all along. Or is it, and a combination of us, of kids evolving and changing and how they approach sports?
I think we're looking at it a lot more now because
mm-hmm.
around most of the world, and I don't know about the US is always slightly different, and I think it's because of the attraction of college ball. I think that is a bigger impact than you realize. But around the world, we're looking at it. The number of kids who play sport competitively around the world has dropped significantly, and it was falling before COVID. COVID just accelerated it. So the number of kids who swim competitively in Australia, for example, is half what it was in the 1990s, in spite of significant population growth. The number of kids who play rugby in New Zealand, home of the mighty All Blacks,
yeah.
probably a 90%, what is it, an 88% winning record over 100 years, one of the greatest sporting teams in the world. The number of kids who play rugby in New Zealand competitively has fallen. The number of kids who play soccer in England has fallen. So around the world, competitive sport is in trouble. And we're increasingly, people are going, why? Why is it? Now, people will say, oh, it's the internet. Well, rubbish. Everybody's got the internet. We've learned to live with it. That's, kids are not right. getting up in the morning going, I'm going to surf the internet. That means I hate basketball. That's, no, it's got nothing.
Right.
People will say, oh, it's parents. Parents are really pushy.
Yeah.
Parents are forcing their kids to do things. They're really busy. Well, that's always been the case. Parents have been scrambling, working two jobs, trying to find ways of supporting their family. That hasn't really changed. I believe in absolute honestly, the reason that we're looking at this is we got coaching wrong. Having said that I think what we did, and we all fell for the trap, is we became more exposed to how the greats were training. and there was more video and more content on the internet. And coaches have gone, right, if Jordan is doing that, then my six-year-olds, well, it's a classic thing on Netflix, I think, at the moment, there's a special on the great Lionel Messi, the greatest football player, soccer player.
I haven't seen it yet, but yeah, I know, again, I saw the preview.
And he's playing football at four, and at six, two clubs were in a battle to try and get him at 6 years of age in Argentina on who he'd play for. Now, a friend of mine said, basically, Wayne, that proves you're wrong, that you've got to have the kids training hard at six because Messi did it. There's 250 million football players around the world, 250 million soccer players. There's one of him. You got more chance of winning the lottery next week than coming up with a Messi. For the other 249,999,000 kids, the concept is, how do I create an environment where they fall in love with kicking a football so that if you love what you do what you love and you keep coming? You know, this big challenge we've all got right now is the number of kids playing competitive sport in most places around the world has fallen. The only kid who doesn't get better, Bill, is the one who's not coming.
Right.
If we have better facilities, the kids will come. If we get them new tracksuits, the kids will come. If we get all new balls and a new gym, they'll come. No, they'll come if they're having fun, they're learning, they like the coach, and they're in love with the sport. And so we're really looking, as an industry, and certainly coach educators, we're looking and saying, how do I create the experience of the game which allows an athlete to fall in love with it? How do I build a quality connection? How do I engage? How do I inspire the heart, mind, and soul, spirit, whatever you believe in, of an athlete? How do I build a learning environment which is interesting and engaging? If I do those things, they stay and they keep coming. And if they keep coming, they can get better. We've got a lot of – how many great basketballers do you know, 15, 16-year-old basketballers, are sitting at home playing Xbox? And is it because they hate the game? No. It's because they hate the experience that we gave to them of the game.
Yeah.
So who delivers the experience of basketball? Basically us.
Yeah.
It's us. We
right.
And if the people who are wanting – a wonderful, enjoyable, engaging experience of basketball, they're saying that's what we want, and we're giving them something that they don't want, they're not enjoying, they're not loving, they're not feeling, not playing, they stop coming. So I say to coaches, instead of like blaming your national federation or your state league, or which is easy to do, that in some cases they deserve it in all sports, but instead of saying that, saying, what can I do to coach better? How can I create better relationships? How do I make this more enjoyable? How do I give the players ownership over their own destiny? How do I build training environments which really inspire them that they want to do? Or am I just rolling out practices that, you know, I was in New Zealand recently and talking to coaches about where swimming is. And it's really easy to say the National Federation should do this. The National, you know, the State Association should be doing this and that. They're not delivering the day-to-day experience of the game. We are. We have to take responsibility for coaching better. That's because we're delivering the game. You know, I say to administrators all over the world, Bill, I say, do you know who basketball is? It's the coach. Why? Because the coach is delivering the experience of the game. It's a McDonald's example. Who is McDonald's? It's not the CEO of McDonald's, and it's not Ronald McDonald or Grimace. McDonald's is the young person saying, would you like fries with your Big Mac? That's who McDonald's is. It's whoever is delivering the experience of the organization is the organization, and we deliver the experience of sport to kids and families. So we've got to take responsibility for a lot of this.
Amen to that. I mean, that is absolutely right on. And that's why we do what we do, right? We talk to coaches, we educate coaches, we do the, you know, podcasts and Facebook groups and newsletters and YouTube, right? To help spread and help educate. So we're nearing the end here. I got I guess two questions. Question number one, you're going to pull out your Harry Potter magic wand and you're going to change something about youth sports, and it's going to happen right here on this podcast. One, what would that be? That's the first question. We'll follow up with another one.
Yeah, get coaches to coach appropriate to the age and stage of the kids they coach. That's coach the kid right in front of
them. Say that one more time, the age and stage. That's so yes.
I think one of the things that we all got trapped on is what we call this concept of the pathway. And I've argued about this for a long time. It hasn't been popular. But the pathway was a model that originated for some very smart people in Canada. Most of the world bought into it, and everybody uses pathway. The problem with the pathway, Bill, is that it suggests that there's a direct and linear development plan or pathway for every athlete from the time they pick up a ball to being in the Lakers. And so what coaches, parents, players, administrators have got in their mind is that it's an inevitability that if they're on the pathway, they're going to play pro ball. Great, great story I love to tell with the time we've got available. Yeah. That tennis here was doing a review of why tennis was failing here. And they got one of the professional, the big management groups like PricewaterhouseCoopers or one of the big, big consulting firms. And they did the review for them. It was really serious. These guys knew how to get information. And they called me in as an expert witness. I always say expert witness to the crimes. But no, they got me to come in. And one of these guys said, Wayne, do you know what we think is wrong with tennis? It's this pathway thing. And I said, why do you say that? And he said, because everywhere we go, the assumption is that when a kid picks up a tennis racket, they're going to be Serena Williams. Mm-hmm. And they said, it's insane. And he used this wonderful line. He said, it's like assuming that every kid who picks up a crayon has to hold it this way, because when they're an orthopedic surgeon, that's how they need to hold the scalpel. And I said, mate, that's the most brilliant thing. It should be on a T-shirt. So that's the most, I said, because that's what we do. Is we assume that every 8-year-old we're going to coach should be, could be, wants to be, can be Michael Jordan. And it's so wrong. There is one of him. There's one Lionel Messi, one Serena Williams, that we keep applying this concept of the outlier to 7-year-olds who honestly think being a superhero is a career choice. Like, it's so insane. And this guy picked it up, an outsider from the industry who doesn't coach. He said, the pathway is what's killing you, because we now believe, everyone in the industry thinks that they have to be on this linear pathway that will inevitably take them to high-level success. Let 8-year-olds be 8-year-olds. So that's what, if I could change one thing, is if you've got a 12-year-old in front of you, they are not on the pathway to be Serena Williams or in the Lakers or the Bulls or anything else. They are on a pathway to having a great time, going home and having a pizza. That's all they are. That's the only path that should matter, is the path back to their mum and dad's car where they say, hey, that was a great practice. Focus on the age and stage and coach the person in front of you. And if they're still coming at 16, 17, yeah, let's talk about college and let's talk about, but that is the biggest problem in sport, is we're coaching with expectation and assumption that everybody wants to be, could be, should be, can be world-class. And it's just not the case.
Do you see those athletes though, those one percenters, do they have it? Is there something, they have it at 6 years old. You talked about Messi, right? And he's just gifted. And not to say that athletes can't be dull, because that's not what I'm saying at all, but those special, they're special. Let's just put it that way, right? And Michael Jordan wasn't special when he was young, right? Kobe Bryant wasn't either. Steph Curry, right? They were just average kids playing the game, and they were, the undersized and whatever else, right? What's your opinion on that?
Yeah, really. I think the incidence of what you call talented, gifted, exceptional athletes is a lot rarer than people think. I don't see them very often. I say to parents, I draw a grid, and I've had millions of views on this. Is I draw a grid, and on one axis it's talent, on the other axis it's attitude, or you could say love of the game. In the bottom corner, kids who've got no talent and who hate the game, we're not going to see because they're not there. And it's sad, and we'd like to see them healthy and fit for the rest of their life, but we're not going to see them a coaching program. At the top end, high talent and the right attitude, man, you see Tiger Woods, Serena Williams, Lionel Messi, man, you're talking about the outliers of the outliers. Exceptionally talented, incredibly gifted, hardworking, passionate, resilient. There's not many of them. They're really rare. But unfortunately, their influence vastly outweighs their percentage because every parent in the world thinks that their kid's in that group. So the kid's dominating, you know, under 11 basketball at a high school level, and they got him already as a starting player for the Lakers. You know, that's a but that's because
parents and ranked.
That end, this end is no talent, no interest, no passion, no love of the game. There, they've got the package. Michael Phelps, very, very rare do you see them. This corner, the heartbreakers. High talent, terrible attitude. We waste so much time thinking, oh, we'll change them. You know, we'll impact on their behavior. We'll get them with their talent. They could be anything. And with my ego, I can turn them into something. I can teach them attitude. Really breaks your heart. Just breaks your heart. We spend so much time trying to convert them to there that, and for my belief is the parents are mostly responsible for developing attitudes, character, and values at a young age. The majority of professional players that I work with, Bill, and I'm talking guys in million-dollar contracts and more, they're not untalented. They've got to have something, otherwise they're not going to be considered for that group. Right. But they love the game. I can't tell you how many times I've had groups of professional footballers together around the world. So, guys, let's talk about why we're here. What, you know, we're starting to do a bit of a values culture development bit. So, guys, let's discuss, why are you here? What led you into this room? You know, professional football players in Premier League in England, rugby players here in New Zealand, when I've done that exercise, I love the game. I just love the game. I love being here. I love the ball in my hand. I love the feeling of the ball in my foot. I love playing this game. None of them say money, being attractive to partners, television. They all go, I love the game. I love this game. The word love is the first thing that comes out of their mouth. So I say to coaches, are you coaching love? You can coach skills, but are you coaching this lifelong, unbreakable commitment to loving the game? Because, you know, Bill, I talk to coaches about our responsibility for the multi-generational impact of what we do. So you got a kid who's a superstar at 8, 9, and 10, which I disagree that term even exists, but let's go with it. But they drop out at 14, 15. Okay, some people feel disappointed. But if they drop out because what we call the fumes catch them, car fumes and perfumes, they want to grow up, that if it's for most people, it's not that they hate basketball. It's just that they grew up and they want to do something else. They want to study. They want to buy a car. They want to date. They want a part-time job. School's important to them. Most of them drop out for those reasons, not because of anything negative. But if they love the game, 15 years from now, they bring back their kids to coach Bill or to coach Jane or to coach... because we've instilled that unbreakable connection between them and the game. They love the game, so that impacts on the next generation as well. And their kids growing up with that love of the game inspired by their mum or dad or by their care or their parent, that might instill in it, they could be the great player that comes along because they're growing up in a family which is in love with the game of basketball. So you might not have the superstar that you want right now, but by focusing on that type of environment of loving the game, that has a trickle-on effect to other generations and to other people. And I try to get coaches to understand that is way more important than just extending practice and worrying about how many capillaries they've got in their skeletal muscle.
Yeah. Well, and I'm going to add to that too is – and the love for one another, the teammates, and right? Yeah. And you know, because then you're going to come back and then, you know, your teammates support you. And I see that, right? I see that happen where you know, the kids on my team, you know, they weren't the most talented, but as they started coming back, that talent grew, the love for the game grew, the love for one another grew. And now, you know, we go to tournaments and they're winning tournaments against teams we would have got blown out last year by 20 or more points, right? They couldn't compete. But I think it's not just one of those things. I think it's that combination. You put that in the big pot and now, you know, good things are happening. And they're, I can see, I always say it, you know, it's joy. It's the deep seated, it's not just happiness. It's joy that comes from the heart, right? It's inside. And when you see that, you know, you got something special with a group and that you reached them deeply and you had a profound impact on changing their lives, right?
And it's true, Bill, that look, when I do work with professional players, people, they ask me, what's the difference between working with kids and working with pros? I say, basically not much, because people think that when you're working with an elite team, it's all about, you know, you use words like commitment and excellence and the relentless pursuit of quality and all those things are there, of course. But I use words like love, connection, empathy, inspiration, just as much as, so if I'm working with a pro football team, and I mean, rugby teams, they're like going to war, like football. It's ferocious. It's very physical. There's a lot of soft tissue injury. I mean, you're asking these guys to put their lives more or less on the line. You know, that's where you're at with the amount of focus and intensity that you're asking of them. But when we do teamwork, we talk about caring for each other, the love of each other, trust in each other, belief in each other, supporting each other. Yeah. We talk about all those things as being just as important as all those big, traditionally performance-focused words like commitment and dedication and drive and all those things. Because if that's there, then everything... I mean, the coach asked me the other day about... You know, he said, oh, the modern players, they're not loyal to the colour. You know, we used to say, oh, it's all about the team and the colour. You know what? He's exactly right. They're not motivated as much as maybe in the past by what you're wearing. Their love is for each other. The connection is grown from a love of the game, but their commitment, they don't do it for the school so much anymore. They do it for each other. And if you tap into that, then your team becomes very, very powerful. They're doing it for each other, you know, because we have, like a lot of the world, it used to be a player would join a club and stay with them until they retired. Now it's, I go wherever the money is, I go.
Yeah.
That's part of professional sport all around the world. So you can't motivate them by holding up a jersey and saying, in the 1950s, we were the most, they don't care. They care about the person standing next to them. And when you're building a team, I think now I focus on that. How do I create an environment where those relationships become authentic and based on real things? How do I build that environment of real love within a professional team? That's incredibly important.
All right, Wayne, this has been absolutely fantastic. And I know I will... listen to this podcast several times. On one parting note, what would you say, or what do you want to say to youth coaches out there? You have the mic. How can we help them?
Drink heavily. never drink in front of your athletes. Let's make it really clear.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
in all seriousness, take care of yourself. Take care of yourself emotionally, physically, spiritually. Make sure your energy level and your health and your well-being, your mental and emotional well-being, because our nature is givers. We turn up and, you know, typical, you know, let's call it the Wayne and Bill principle of energy sacrifice in basketball. Because you turn up for practice, you've been thinking about it all day. You've got a day job usually, if you're youth.
Yeah, career. Yeah, yeah.
You've done your day job. you're not thinking about your day job. You're thinking about shooting practice and spinning out of giving people space and all those things.
Yeah.
All day you've been thinking about it. You're absolutely pumped, right? You're hyper. And all you want to do is convey it. Kids come in. Hey, guys. Hey, gone. Hey, coach. Yeah. You know, and you're giving them your energy. You're giving them your life. You're giving them your time. You're giving them your passion. And they start to respond, you know, and they pick up and they pick up and they pick up. And the end of practice, they're going, hey, coach, that was great. Yeah, well, you've given them that gift of you, and you're sitting on the side going, man, I need a cigarette and a six-pack because you've got nothing left.
Right.
And I see coaches just burning themselves out because they give everything they got because they love it so much and they love the kids, and they've got nothing left. And so many coaches have got broken relationships. And seriously, things like alcohol, social drugs, cigarettes, obesity, because they give everything to the kids and they don't do anything for themselves. And if you want to be a better coach, treat yourself like an athlete. Have rest periods. Have recovery time. Watch your diet. Try to get some exercise. You know, everything in moderation. Find time to go fishing, watching Major League, whatever it is you love. Spend time with family and friends. Treat yourself, if you had an athlete and you wanted them to have a sustainable career as a successful athlete, what would you tell them to do? Take care of yourself, get plenty of sleep, hydrate, eat well, have great relationships, have a passion other than the game. Same thing for us is, you know, there's a great line I like, Bill, which is if you want to change a life, become a coach. If you want to change the world, coach the coaches. That the impact that we have as a group, collectively as coaches, on thousands and thousands of lives in our coaching career is considerable. Imagine if you've got a 30-year coaching career, the thousands of athletes that you've inspired, you've taught lessons like respect, dignity, teamwork, love, goal setting, team, all those things that we've taught thousands and thousands of young Americans. I mean, it's one of the most influential and powerful roles that you can have anywhere in society, but you can only do it if you've got the capability and the capacity to do it as a human being. If you're not taking care of yourself, you can't change anything. So absolutely, number one principle.
That's perfect. No, and we'll end on that. But before we go, where can coaches connect with you? Your Twitter, is that the best place?
At the local bar. Don't get the wrong idea, not all Australians drink, just most of us. But look, if you go Wayne Goldsmith coaching, that'll open up a whole bunch of stuff. Just go to Google and go Wayne Goldsmith coaching. That'll take you to my every day on Twitter. I put a coaching tip.
And they're good. They're good. Yep.
If you go Wayne Goldsmith coaching, that'll take you to my blog. It'll take you to YouTube channel, which again is Wayne Goldsmith coaching. Everything, if you put Wayne Goldsmith coaching, that'll roll out social media, YouTube, everything will be on there. And much to my wife's disappointment, I don't charge for any of it. So feel free to dig in, subscribe, and keep fighting the good fight.
All right, Coach. Thank you. How was that, right, Coach? Lead with Coach.
My pleasure.
All right, Coach. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time. Keep on doing what you're doing. You are providing an amazing service to all of us out there and changing lives while doing it.
Thanks, Bill.
All right.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.